it was very easy to obtain an image that, out of the simulation. There was no need to care about the calibration and other real-world details if you didn't want to. And the calibration was performed once in a standalone code, so you could produce a calibration run, then with another code do the calibration, and then it was hard-coded in the simulation, so the user never had to care about it, never had to understand what was going on. And at least for me, when I got this code, it was a bit complicated to find out how I could do a calibration if needed. And then it could pass a lot of arguments from the user to the, via the command line to the program. So it was not everything in the C++ code and with a requirement to be recompiled. Some disadvantages was that even sometimes some simple things like choosing a different phantom needed to be done into the code and then recompile everything. Then if for whatever reason the user needed to redo the calibration, the tools were somewhere around. You could ask people and find them. But there was not a unified workflow. Unified, I mean, as you will see later on, the same as with experimental data, which we use all the time, and we are familiar with that. And then by skipping this whole calibration process, which sometimes it's good to be able to do, the code was very useful and easy to use, but it didn't allow easily a deeper understanding of for the subtleties of the scanner. So at some point with discussions between me, Valentina, Vladimir, and Reinhard, we took the decision that we want to have a code that simulates the real scanner response and the output data as realistically as possible. Again, there was a lot of a lot was already done by Valentina. And what I found really was the main part of the code that created the digitized output of the tracker. So instead of having the positions, you had the FPGA numbers, chip numbers, strip number for of every heat. And there was a simple digitization of the energy detector output, so it would give ADC numbers instead of WEPL. What needed to be done, was important to be done, was to make the code more realistic wherever was possible. Interface, this the most important thing is interface the code with the existing pre-processing software, so this was missing. And then to add whenever possible new phantoms, test it, clean it, debug it, and stuff like that. And there were things that could be added, not necessarily important, but could make the code more usable. So among others, an easy way to run the code via macro input files. So the previous version, which was this reconstruction data output code, which would output data directly being usable from the reconstruction software, is not lost as we move to the other version. So the code is in the master branch of the GitHub repository, so everyone who has access to the repository can freely check out the code and work with it. To make a finding of this code simple in the future especially, it is tagged as a version 1. The current is 1.1 after a bug fix. Then due to some limited resources, we cannot support both versions the same frequency and the same effort. So I don't do any further development right now in that code that gives directly a reconstruction. The data can be used from the reconstruction. So I would only do bug fixes if people find some. And then eventually, as I said, the more realistic version of the code will be merged into the master. So this will be release version 2 something. And then the other code, the other version, will always be reachable as version 1.1 or whatever version 1.x we'll have in the future. And we can even remove it to a separate branch if we need to do some minor development. So now we move to the next version of the code, which is the one I'm working mostly with the last 1 year, or a bit more than 1 year. I will call it here, it's just conventional, some naming I gave it in order to make the distinction. It's not really official. It's the raw data output version, because it's the code that will give out a data file which is very, very similar, almost identical to the to what we get from our scanner when we do an experimental scan. So it's currently contained in a branch which is called Stripified, because it would simulate the tracker down to the strip level. It's very frequently updated, so it receives constant development and maintenance, mostly from the LMU team, but also from some other users. We shouldn't forget, of course, that it's in a development status, so at some point it will be put in the master branch, but it's not the cleanest code you could find. And then we try to avoid having any bugs by using it and testing it all the time, but we cannot rule out that there might be a bug somewhere. And also it changes because we develop the code, so we mostly add stuff. So as mentioned, currently the Stripified branch is just a screenshot I took from GitHub this morning. It has this master branch and then it has the Stripified branch. So you see that we develop it. We put something back every few days or a week, so it's not it's a regular development cycle. And the output data is for every proton you have in this file. You have this FPGA number, chip number, strip number, and ADC number. So the first three pieces of information describe what comes out from the tracker. And then the ADC number is the digitization of the energy detector response. So it's realistic data, which means our scanner doesn't have a homogeneous TV response. So if we look at the front face of one of our energy stages, depending on where the proton will hit, there is a different response. So this is corrected in the pre-processing, and this Gen 4 code also simulates a realistic TV response, which is also corrected in the pre-processing. And the ADC number for every proton contains also the detector resolution and a pedestal. I also changed the polystyrene and RSP that we had for the calibration phantom. It was slightly different between simulation and reality, and then there was a flag to change back and forth in the pre-processing, so now it all matches. And then a few days ago, from the work done in Munich and the discussions with Vladimir and Reinhardt, it was found that the small difference that we see still in the simulation, the experiment originated from one of the sources was this light production saturation. So applying Birch's effect, now parameterizing the simulation, make things even better. So we move towards more and more realism at all levels. The geometry of the scanner hasn't changed because, of course, the scanner hasn't changed, but also because the previous version was already describing the scanner in a very high detail. So here's just a screenshot from the simulation with a CTP-404 phantom. And then talking about phantoms, we have all the ones that were in the old version and basically all the ones that were scanned in the last few years, either in Loma Linda in Chicago, so the CTP phantom, the Edge phantom, CatFan, Water phantom, and so on. We refined a bit the Water phantom to add the walls according to the technical drawings. Then the Wedge phantom and the bricks for the calibration. Now the calibration is done on this Wedge phantom only. And something to be added in September, latest October, is the capability to read in this pediatric head phantom we have. So Valentina worked to digitize this phantom, have a DICOM version of it, and would like to include it and be able to simulate also such scans. Then in terms of beams, the user can simulate several simple beams or rectangles, pencil beams, cone beams, and so on, also reading phase-based data whenever available.
And then the last point, what I call messenger, it's basically that instead of, as in the old version, that it was a mixture.
George, your quality of your voice changed.
Is it better now?
Yes.
Good. So the last part is that instead of what we had in the old code that people could pass arguments from the command line, as this would become longer and longer, now I'm using some functionality, Gen 4 functionality, which is called messengers. What it means in the end is that the user can use an input text file to drive the whole simulation. So for the most of the things a user might need to do, won't need to write any code or even recompile. Of course, there might be things like adding a new phantom, which have to be implemented in C++, and I can do that, or any other user can do that. But for the most of the standard operations you will do with this simulation, if you don't want to, you don't need to write any C++ code. Then what about now the simulation workflow now with this new version that emulates the experimental scan? So it's the same as for an experimental data set. What one would do, the user would do, is to simulate calibration runs. You need six, one which is called an empty run, which means without an object. Then the wedge only and the wedge plus 1, 2, 3, and 4 bricks. You get a set of binary data. Then you simulate a scan of your phantom and projections. It could be 90, can be 180, 360, whatever number. So again, this is your imaging scan. And then you go to the pre-processing software, which is also available in GitHub, and it's used for the experimental data. And you process the calibration runs and you get two text files which describe the calibration and the TV correction. So as the simulated setup is quite static, so things do not change in the virtual world we work with in the simulation, there's no need to resimulate and reprocess the calibration. You can do it one, and unless there is some improvements, you can, or if you want to try different beam types and so on, you can use the same. So I'm thinking that I also might add to the repository their latest calibration file. So people, if you want to bypass the calibration procedure, they can have those files. So having those files, the user should pre-process the imaging scan. So whatever phantom, the water phantom or the cat fan, using those two text files. And then you get your data for the reconstruction. So it's binary data with coordinates and Weppel in millimeters. So people can either bypass it or use it. Of course, you will always have to do the last part, which is pre-processing your imaging scan out of this code. The time I have now for this presentation is not enough, of course, to explain you everything about the code. It's more the purpose of the presentation is to let you know where to find information or and also introduce myself to the people who don't know me so they can ask me questions. So where can I find instructions either for people who have used some version of the code or for newcomers so that might need step-by-step instructions? So last week, triggered by questions of one of the users, I started a wiki page in GitHub. So if you see in the screenshot I have below, if you go to GitHub, you can have the code, you can see what are the issues, pull requests and so on. And there is a wiki text there. So if you click on that, you can go to the wiki page I started. So it started on a Friday, so it was until a couple of days ago almost empty. Now I keep on filling it. So it's still not complete, but it's towards being useful. It's not that far from that. And also there's the intention to start a forum web page, but this depends on how many questions and emails I will be receiving. So this is how the wiki page looks like. So it has all the steps and then parts of code that shows you what you have to put into your type and into your terminal and do whatever needed to get the code running. So how to run the code, just in a nutshell, the code actually, after you compile the code, you get an executable and you need this input macro file. So it's the executable, this pct_phase2 is the executable, and then run mac or whatever name is the input macro file. The important thing is the commands the macro file contains, not the name. An example of this file exists already in GitHub, but as it's used already by people who, me and some of other people in the group in LMU who know already the code well, it's not the easiest thing to understand without reading the documentation. That's why I started with the documentation recently. So a couple of examples of commands is that if you want to choose one of the existing phantoms that have names, so the first line lists us the names, so just a comment in the macro file, and then you can use one command, which is this pct_phase2 /det/set_phantom, water phantom, and then you will pick the water phantom. You don't need to recompile if you want to change to another phantom. There's an update command below that updates the geometry of the scanner.
George, if you want to interrupt you. So you said cat fan, and then you have CTP404. So actually, CTP stands for cat fan.
Yeah, I think there is just one of the two is obsolete. CatFan is a bit obsolete, so okay. It can be removed and updated.
There's the CTP528, which is the line pair phantom.
Yes.
That maybe that one.
I have to look into if it's the full CatFan, which is all the different slices, which is the line pair phantoms and the CTP.
These individual modules, these individual
yes.
CatFan modules.
I'll have to check it.
Not the entire CatFan.
Yeah.
So they can all be stacked up into one phantom.
Yes, that's true.
You never do that.
So the user can pick any phantom according to the name. It has, of course, to match exactly one of the names on the list. Otherwise, the code will complain and abort the run. Then if you want to set a rotation angle.
George, one more time. Go back.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a Hermann target, and I think this is in honor of Gabor Hermann, who created a simulation phantom, which we used very early on. Scott Penfold did. So you still have that one?
Yeah, I try not to remove any phantoms. Just separate classes.
So it's quite modular. So I prefer leaving it there until everybody tells me nobody needs it, rather than remove it and then we have to reprogram it.
Keep going.
Yeah. So then if you want to change the rotation in your imaging scan, for example, you want to rotate your phantom 4 degrees every time or whatever, you can then set this argument by the set phantom rotation, and then it will change the phantom, will rotate by whatever amount of degrees you put there. If you want to do a calibration run, and then it means you have a wedge phantom and you can add bricks. So the bricks have 50.8 millimeters thickness. If you put zero, it means you have only the wedge. If you want to add up bricks, you just need to add up multiples of 50.8 millimeters of brick thickness. Another example is that you might need to want, especially if you're running a cluster, to put stuff in different directories or wherever you like. So you can tell the code where to put stuff, just the path, relative or absolute, it all works. And then there's also the beam. Of course, the code cannot cover all the possible beams that the user might think. This is kind of impossible, but there are different beams programmed in there. So for example, one can have a simple rectangular beam, a plane, which emits protons perpendicularly to the plane, and then define the energy. You can also define other particles than protons, helium, for example. The user can use one of the predefined phase spaces or cone beams. So there, in the documentation, eventually in the coming weeks, you will see all those details. Already I added a few more information this afternoon, so it's a bit more useful than this morning when I started the slides. And then I will close the presentation with a few slides of what the code can do. So we did some validation tests with Robert and Vladimir. So this is just an example of when the data passes the pre-processing, and then you do the same for experimental data, and you shoot 200 MeV protons without any phantom, what is the response of your detector? So in most of the cases, I think you cannot see the red and the blue, which means that the simulation and the experiment matches quite well. So it's just the energy deposit in the different stages and then the sum of all energies in the end. And then in the next slide, somehow more complicated, well, not really that complicated. It's a 2D graph which shows on the vertical axis what is the energy deposit in the stopping stage, and then what is the calculated WEPL or WET basically in millimeters. This is a calibration run, so we know the true WET from the geometrical information, from the tracker information. This is how we do the calibration. And then what is how it looks like the energy deposit in the stopping stage versus this WET. And we could see that it matches very, very well, but still there were some differences. You will see that most of the stages, apart from the very first one, the left one, the energy deposit in the simulation is higher. And then we realized out of discussions among us here and with Vladimir that this could be the Briggs effect, which was not into the code. We didn't think it's so important before solving other issues. And then it turns out that we arrived at the point that this is important. So with the help of Vladimir and Reinhard, we had the discussion last week. So this is the first test of simulation by parameterizing this Briggs effect, so the saturation of how many photons, optical photons, will be created through an energy deposit of a proton or any other particle. So it's a bit noisier because we didn't have much time to do higher statistics, but it already, I think apart from the noise, will be difficult to say which one is the experiment, which one is the simulation. And this agreement helps us understand what the scanner does, what the calibration does, and why we see some artifacts in the image. If this you can do only if you have a very detailed simulation. So this is just a few validation results also on images. It's a bit older without the Briggs effect. So we see that we can reproduce some of the artifacts, the central darker spot. And then I will close in with the result of this is versus the radius, the accuracy, the water phantom. So one would be ideal, then plus minus 1% line, so 1.01 and 0.99. the very large king at the very end is just because this is the plastic wall, so it's not the water part. So we can see that it kind of describes very well the measurement. And I will close the presentation. I will just spend a few more seconds just thanking a few people. So Vladimir and Reinhard for having me hosted many times in Loma Linda and discussing all the detector effects and how to parameterize them. Then Robert, whom I visited in Santa Cruz last year and worked a lot since then also to interface the code with pre-processing. So by changing just one flag in the pre-processing software saying, okay, this is Monte Carlo data, everything else is the same, and then you would run the pre-processing as you would do on experimental data. Then, of course, Valentina and Pierluigi, who gave me all their existing Gen4 code. And Stuart, who tested the code in the last couple of weeks, so he triggered the whole documentation thing. And I forgot, Sergei Uzunyan, is he there?
No.
In person? No, okay, because he also helped quite a lot in the development of the code and several ideas in the last 1 year. I forgot to put him in the slide, but he helped a lot. So this is it from my side, just an introduction, what is there and what is the status, and to urge you to use it if you want to do simulations, and not hesitate to ask me by email if you have any problem. But check the documentation first. Right now it's not complete, but it will be in the next weeks.
Thanks for doing all this, George. It's highly
You're welcome.
You're not getting any money for this. It's great. I'm sure there are other people that contributed to this, so I apologize for those not mentioned. But I should mention that that Keith Schubert is maintaining the GitHub trailer. Mm-hmm. And I think any requests needs to go to you, Keith. Is that correct? Okay. So we'll put all that information on the workshop website, so if people are really interested, they will get access to the GitHub. They can run the code. They can, you know, have their PCT scanner in their office or living room, wherever they want to do it, and generate data, and get more to the reconstruction maybe hopefully tomorrow. So this workshop topic schedule I sent everyone is very approximate. So there will still be coming talks on reconstruction, some on MLP, like Mark wanted to give us one, I guess. So Charles, I haven't heard from him. He may pop up out of nothing and say, hey, I want to give a talk. So it's all in flux, and I hope we'll have enough time to let everyone talk who wants to talk. So now we have lunch break.
Could we start, George, a question?
Oh, yes, of course. We have some time for discussion, actually. Okay, so some question, George, for you from Fritz.
Please go ahead.
I was just curious about this Birks effect and Ringer effect. I guess my question is, do you simulate the calibration with Birks effects and reconstruction with Birks and calibration without and reconstruction without? I would think both of those would be internally consistent. So I'm just curious why it was so important, I guess, to simulate that properly.
So he's, in case you didn't capture
parts of it only,
asking why is it so important to even simulate the Birks? So the guy was German, so his name is Birks, not Birks. But so why do we think that we should go to that much length and, you know, also simulate the Birks effect?
Exactly. Simulation and reconstruction internally consistent? I mean, why
isn't it consistent?
Yeah.
It is consistent now, right? So I think this is all very recent. And so when the student, Janis, did this the first time, he found there was a difference between simulation and experiment. So he was not satisfied as a good German student. It's not perfect, it's not good. And so he decided to actually include the Birks effect into the simulation to see whether they get better consistency. Is that correct, George? Did I say it right? Oops, I've lost him. George, are you still there?
I would still think that he did a calibration. calibration stuff, even if it wasn't, the data wasn't realistic. At least it would be.
Well, I think in the case of the phase two scanner, it has some impact on the behavior at the interfaces.
Right.
Yeah, it's that you'll fail to model if you don't have it in the simulation.
Right.
So folks, the other side is you could make a correction to the measurement as opposed to making a correction to the simulation. So you correct the measurement to give you the quantity you're after, rather than accept that that measured quantity is not correct and trying to correct the simulation.
Vladimir, you want to comment on that?
That's true in principle, but part of the reconstruction is that you're actually missing data from thresholds that you don't see, and noise effects and so forth. So
you mean when you do the simulation?
I think it's probably easier to put it in the simulation than try to unfold data.
The objective is to see that you can understand why the measurement looks like it does. Which is reasonable. There might be something you don't understand.
So in the end, as you know, we're converting the measurement to REPL, which is really what we need for the reconstruction. So at that point, we don't really care what we converted. So in a way, there is
internal. But there is still energy present because we put energy threshold, not weapons threshold. And it should be done like.
Right. So it's obvious Vladimir doesn't like the energy threshold, the noise threshold, or whatever. Right. Mm. So let's get rid of it.
We can get rid of all the noise.
Yeah, some of the noise we can get rid of. Okay.
So comment about this. There is a parallel development, which we'll be discussing, I guess, tomorrow. It's the Topaz code, which, some of these things which have been implemented in the past GL4 code are available in the Topaz code. Some discussion needs to go forward. Where how we would proceed with the developments in these different systems. You can have parallel developments, or you can get together and work together.
Right. So I would see it complementary and parallel, as you said. And I was happy to learn Topaz recently from Jose. And it's particularly if you're interested in having realistic beam sources, beam data.
Sorry, my connection dropped. So
okay, we're just in the middle of an important discussion, George, about Gen 4 versus Topaz, which
they're both Gen 4.
So I'm about So Topaz application versus entirely pure Gen 4 application, right? So. So I'm in favor of pursuing both. Some people are more familiar and more comfortable using Topaz. It's very easy to use interface. It can also use realistic beam data from facilities, treatment centers. It can simulate the time dependence of a scanning pencil beam. All this is an advantage. But if somebody likes Gen 4, I think that person will happily use what you are maintaining and further developing. For example, Stuart, he was happily willing to use what you offered, and you working out the kinks with him, which is nice. So unfortunately, he has not yet arrived. So I recorded your presentation, also that you're talking for him, so he can listen to it later. And also, if anyone else is interested, so all the presentations will be up, but this particular session has an audio recording. So if you want to listen to it again, if you don't mind, Josh will put the audio recording, which is a relatively small file.
Yeah, it's fine.
Also on the website.
I can show you the slides as well, so people can browse through the slides.
Everyone who presented this morning should send me the slides so I can forward them to Niels and he will put them on the website. And Pierre, I already have yours, you don't need to. Okay, with that, we can all go to lunch if you want to. So there are several lunch options we have. One is just go with us up to the faculty dining room. So that lunch will be provided. There's no cost for attendees. If somebody still wants to pay, feel free to show your credit card or give some cash and pay the cashier. So when you, it's a buffet, so you pass through the buffet aisle, you get your food, you pass the cashier, you say, Dr. Schulte workshop. And thereby you're free to go, or you say I pay myself, and then you can pay with your credit card. So I know that some of you, or one of you at least, is paid by the institution, so they cannot get free lunch for twice. So they want to pay themselves in that case, which makes sense. So it's entirely up to you. If you don't like vegetarian food, that's all they serve. There's Cafe Society on University down the road, and you're free to go there. It may be crowded though, and it's very hot sitting outside, but so you have the choice between vegetarian in a cool environment and non-vegetarian in a hot environment, and they also have coffee there, which they don't have in the cafeteria. So those are your choices, and then please be back just before 2 for the next session.
Reinhard, can I make a short closing comment?
Yes, please.
Before you go to lunch. About Topaz and Gen 4, I mean, basically they're both Gen 4. Of course, Topaz is an application with a much more mature interface than the one I presented. So for me, the choice was a bit of a personal choice to maintain this and develop this. And the main reason was because I wanted both for me and for the rest of the collaboration, PCT collaboration, to offer a code which is open source, so everybody can look at any line in the code, and which is free of charge.
Yes, thank you.
So just a comment on that, and we will be discussing this more tomorrow, is the Topaz team is recently defunded for 5 years by NIH. To provide the Topaz code for free to users. And code is open source except for the core right now, which you would not want to get into anyways. But over the course of the 5 years, the core will also be released to the public. But as far as the part of the code that would contain the PCT scanner, that could be written in as extension, which would be written in GeoM4, and then you can access all the other aspects of the Topaz code, which are very carefully benchmarked.
Right.
So, but I agree it's something for further discussion, but and something that is new. This funding only came in April.
Right. That's good news. So Topaz will be free for all academic users. And I'll be happy to continue work with Jose on also providing instructions and so forth, right? And also tying it into the pre-processing code and the various reconstruction codes that we're running. So we'll get to that later. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Anyone else on Zoom? We'll take like a 2-hour break now. So if you still want to join us then, feel free to. It's open access.